As educators, you're familiar with the age-old resistance queries students launch like flaming arrows. Why do we have to do this? What does this have to do with real life? Questions like these are satisfied through personalized learning, where students drive their learning trajectory and see answers in practice. We invited to the podcast a decorated application person who hits that why bullseye, no strings attached, and she integrates authentic and adaptive assessment. Let's go. Educators, welcome. This is Classroom Conversations, a place for you to share and learn. Classroom Convos is a collaboration of the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia Public Broadcasting. Pleased to meet you at the near end of Season 7. I'm Ashley Mingwasser, your host and guide through this season about personalized learning instruction and its 10 standards. As you know, students will test their teachers with questions about learning relevance. My guest has uncovered how getting them hooked on intriguing, standards-driven assignments naturally keeps students on target. And there's another aspect of personalized learning that we haven't yet addressed this season: how to gauge student mastery in the personalized learning context. I'm talking assessment, authentic and adaptive assessment. The person next to me has that pretty much in the bag, too. Her students call her the STEM lady. She calls herself the application person, and I call her first runner-up for 2025 Georgia Teacher of the Year. Alicia Reno is a National Board Certified STEM teacher for grades 3 through 5 at Tally Street Upper Elementary in Decatur. That's part of City Schools of Decatur. Alicia was Tally Street's Teacher of the Year in 2024. Thanks for being here, Alicia. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here.
You look excited. How was your drive from Decatur, the shortest commute to our studio ever?
Shortest commute ever. It's fantastic. I love this part of the city.
Do you like working in Decatur?
I love working in Decatur. It's amazing.
I want to reference your local publication, Decaturish.
Yes.
Are you familiar?
Oh, I am very familiar.
You had a very focal shout out in a May 2024 article. Your assistant superintendent of City Schools of Decatur, Jennifer Burton, said this: Alicia is an educator who has made an unforgettable impression on her school, our district, and the field of STEM education. She creates an engaging and energizing learning environment for her students, fostering a love of discovery and problem solving in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. How does this legacy make you feel?
Oh my gosh. I know. I wasn't expecting that. It's amazing. I was excited to be a part of it. You know, when I started in Decatur, we didn't have a STEM program for grades, you know, K-5, and I teach at a 3-5 school. So I was really, really honored to be tapped with the responsibility of starting that.
To bear the torch.
Yeah.
You are celebrated, as we heard, for the way you teach. Can you share what topic you addressed in your Georgia Teacher of the Year application?
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah. So we go through an interview and applications, and part of that is that we give a speech at the end. And our topic was why public education matters, why it's important. And I just shared a story about a student I had that came in every day just to use my microwave because I'm a softie, and I said yes. And so he came in every morning to use my microwave to pop his popcorn. We kind of started conversations. We started having a relationship because he was in every single day. I kind of became his safe space. So he would come up to me. He would, you know, just mess around with electronics in the back or build things just kind of on his own. During his recess, even, he would come up and say hi. One day I had a meeting and I rushed into my room, completely forgot that he would be there. And I got there and my room smelled like popcorn. And I had a pile of popcorn on my desk with a note that said, "Thank you for always letting me pop my popcorn." And it kind of hit me then, you know, it's not about the popcorn or the use of the microwave. He just really liked our time together. And the fact that he had left a little something behind for me was really sweet. And so I kind of ended my speech saying that success to me smells like popcorn.
Wow.
And so it was a fun speech. And, you know, my fellow finalists often, every time they smell popcorn, they'll send me a text or let me know that they remember it. So
what a wonderful way to be remembered by something so delicious.
Right. And every time I smell it now, I think of this kid. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely first runner-up worthy. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is incredible. And thanks. I know that that's tough. There are 10 applicants, right? And
there
the Teacher
are.
Of the Year process. So I know you all get to know each other pretty well.
We do. We are very close. So it starts with all the applicants, all the District Teachers of the Year in Georgia, and then it's narrowed down to the top 10. And then we are kind of run through a gauntlet of activity and applications and speeches and, you know, interviews, things like that. And so we kind of become really, really super close. And I literally talk to them daily. We have a text chain. So,
oh, I'd love to see that.
I know.
That would be a fly on the wall.
It's wonderful to have that support.
You all come to the experience with your unique vantage point, yours
yes.
being popcorn on the surface, but underneath student relationships.
Yes.
And that's going to be very much a part of what we talk about
it
today.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, what is it, nearly 25 years in education.
Yes.
That is a commitment to this
sure
line
is.
Of work. What
yes.
led you to schools in the first place?
It's so funny. My family, all of them are public servants. I have military, I have police officers, but most of my family are teachers or work in the education field in some way. And so I was determined to not do that. I was going to be,
of course,
the opposite. You know, it's a rebel.
Rebel.
I wanted to do something where, you know, I could make a difference, but have my voice heard and get to experience amazing things. And so I was going to be a journalist, and I love journalists. I think they're amazing.
Respect.
And
thank
yeah,
you.
That's what I wanted to be. And so I started off going to school for journalism. And when I started, I kind of like had this, you know, maybe this isn't for me, but I kept going. And I looked, you know, forward to my classes. And I got into a class one day, and there was a poster on the wall that just said, you know, whatever you are, be a good one. And that really spoke to me at that moment, because I was like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to be good at this. It just
wow.
kind of hit me. You know, this isn't kind of where my heart is. And I went and changed my major to elementary education begrudgingly. And so that kind of started my path. And as soon as I entered the College of Education at Georgia State University, I knew that I was home and this is where I needed to be. And so from there, I kind of, you know, started teaching fifth grade in Cobb County and decided I wanted to move to Los Angeles and try my craft out there. So I was in LA for 16 years and then came back here. And it turns out that you can make a difference, have your voice heard, and do lots of cool things being a teacher too.
So, yes. So yeah. You're a little bit of a transplant here too.
I am. I grew up in Georgia. I graduated from Harrison High School in Cobb County. And then I went to Georgia State University. And then, yeah, I moved there. And then by the time I came back, the city was a completely different place. So
whatever you are, be a good one.
Yeah.
You're definitely a good educator,
well,
top tier of Georgia, which is very impressive.
Thanks.
And you developed the STEM program at your school.
We
Let's
did.
Get into that next. Okay. Talk to us how the STEM program is formatted at Tally.
Well, it's an interesting thing because we started, and there aren't, at the time when we started the STEM program, there weren't CTAE STEM standards yet. So we kind of looked at what I could teach, and we discovered there were computer science standards. So we kind of started building off of that. And then what I decided to do was kind of build off of the science content standards, look at those, and then figure out ways that I could apply those standards with the students to make them real world, make them applicable to them. And so third through fourth grade, I kind of follow that linear science curriculum. And then for fifth grade, I like to flip the script a little bit and I start with the end. So whatever they're studying at the end of the year, I start with. So that way I'm either pre-teaching something for fifth grade or I am reteaching something that they already know. And so that's kind of been helpful when our kids are starting to study for their milestones. They can kind of remember the things that they learned at the beginning of the year. So that's kind of what I started with.
We're going to dive deep into that
yeah.
later because I think that is so fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, as you know, we are examining personalized learning
yes.
with a microscope. We've
yes.
done, you know, this will be one of our last episodes on it, but we've got 10 this season. Mm-hmm. And all season, we've explored how PL is an instructional strategy that really sees the individual mm-hmm. learner. Which
Absolutely.
I think is a gift for educators and a gift for students. So as a teacher who sees every learner, how do you intentionally plan to meet the diverse needs of your students?
Yeah, it's not easy. I spend a lot of the beginning of my year studying students.
Ah.
I spend a lot of the time before I start, you know, obviously going over things that are, you know, 504 plans or IEPs, the things that I know that my students need. But then every student isn't defined by that. And every student doesn't have an IEP, but they all learn in a completely different ways.
An IEP is?
Oh, an individualized education program. So those are our students with special needs. And so I know a little bit about them coming in, but the benefit of teaching all the students all the time, so third, fourth, and fifth, is by the time my students get to fifth grade, I know them inside and out. I know how they work. And so I am able to kind of study these kids the first couple of weeks. I watch them interact with each other in groups. I see which kid might need to be the person that's building, which might make more sense for them if they're designing on paper or if they're using the computer. And so you kind of start to see these strengths grow throughout the year, and then you capitalize on those. So I use those strengths to kind of create these intentional groupings where I know I'm not putting three builders in one group. I'm not putting like, you know, all my computer coding kids in the same group. I like to intentionally mix them up, allow their strengths to kind of flourish. So it takes a couple of weeks to kind of get to know my new kiddos, my new third graders. But I am a student of students. And so I keep copious anecdotal notes just like a regular classroom teacher would. So as they come in, I look through all their records. I, you know, try to find what makes them tick and then use that to my advantage.
You are definitely a relationship builder. And I might add eye-catching. Can we just hold up that nail polish to those glasses rims there? How did you perfectly match that electric blue nail polish with the rims of your glasses? That looks amazing, Alicia.
Thank you. Thank you.
It feels like only STEM ladies do this, I swear. You've also called yourself the application person. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? And why is that so important in the STEM context?
It is so important in the STEM context. I think that content knowledge is super important. It's great. And so my kids, when they're in their homerooms learning their science content knowledge, and we have amazing teachers that are teaching them this content knowledge. They're doing the hands-on experiments to, you know, prove that this is what happens, this is why this works. But my focus, my two favorite words are why and yet. So yeah, we don't know why that works yet. We don't know how we can use this information yet. And we also need to know why this information is important. So when those kids come to me, they know that the heavier car goes faster down the ramp, but why does that matter? How do we use that in our real lives? And so we talk about why engineers might need to know that when we're designing cars. Why is that important? How can we apply this to our lives? And so I take kind of what they've learned. They're learning about weather systems, and they've learned all of these things about hurricanes. When they come to me, great. So let's use what we know to build a house that would be hurricane proof. Mm. So what are the aspects of a hurricane, and how can we create something that would keep a family safe during that time? I'm not teaching them content knowledge necessarily. I'm teaching them how to apply what they've learned, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Are you able to find a real world connection for every standard? Is that almost sounds impossible to me.
I know. I am. Science, it's not so hard. You know, we study microbiology. You might have, you know, taken a biology class in high school and memorized a whole bunch of vocabulary and a whole,
Might have. Yeah. You're right. Yes.
So when you come to me, why does that matter? Why do we need to know about one-celled organisms? Why is it important that scientists classify them? How can we do that? Is there a better way that we could classify these things? What are some careers that we could have where this matters? Oh, you like medicine? This is interesting to you, but you don't want to be a doctor? There's all these other jobs that you can do. And so any science standard is applicable to the real world. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a science standard. We wouldn't have discovered it. It wouldn't, you know, be important.
Good point.
And so, you know, there has to be a way to use it. And so even the stuff, you know, we talk about classification of animals, which is pretty dry on the surface. You know, it's just like, what's the genus and the, you know, the kingdom and all this stuff. And so we actually have to take that and apply it to real life. Why do scientists need to know this? Like, what if we have a brand new organism? Why is it important? Or, you know, sometimes I even will talk to my students. This is one of my favorite things to do is when we talk about motion and forces and we're talking about these, you know, big high level concepts, you know, Newton's law. I just will talk about Newton's law and I say, OK, well, I don't want to teach this to you. I need you to teach it to me. And so I'll send them out. I want you to find the real world application. Mm. I want you to prove that this works and why it matters. And so forcing that upon them really gets them to start thinking at a very high level of what science is and how science affects their daily lives. So when I have these kids come in and they're like, oh, science, by the end they're leaving and they're like, oh, science. Like they're getting why it matters. And so to do that at, you know, the age of 8, 9, 10, I think is so vital, even younger, is so vital, because then these kids go into middle school, go into high school, they have some ideas about even careers or topics that they're really excited about. And they go into that high school physics class, not looking at it as physics, looking at, oh, this is really important because it can help me when I, you know, I'm designing a new kind of car or when I'm doing this. And so they're looking for those applications. So when they're learning that content knowledge, they're automatically thinking about how that applies to the real world.
I admire that you've asked them to justify the why. You know, you come back to me and tell, find somewhere that this is relevant and why this might be beneficial.
Right.
And that's part of personalized learning. You're giving students that autonomy and that agency to go forth.
Exactly.
Back to your format of this instruction for just a bit. So you see your school is upper elementary, three through five. Do you teach every student STEM?
I do. I teach every student STEM. We made it part of our specials rotation. So students get STEM just like they get art, music, PE. So every kid gets to have it. I think that's so vitally important. You know, sometimes STEM is set aside for our gifted learners or our kids that, you know, are really good at science. I cannot tell you how many times I've had a student come in where the teacher's like, this kid's, you know, struggling a little academically. They come into my classroom and they are designing these, like I had a kid make a fan out of a Pringles can with leftover wires and batteries, and he got it to work. And I was like, this kid, I didn't teach him electricity. He did this on his own. And so that's why STEM is so important, because we're finding those kids. And, you know, those kids don't have to be electrical engineers.
Right.
But there's so many. This is so important for our workforce development as well. I sat this kid down. I'm like, holy cow, like, look at what you did. You could be an electrician. You could, you know, be an electrical engineer. You know, there's no ceiling to what you can do. And so I think all kids need the opportunity to apply what they've learned, see why it's important, and persevere and struggle and fail. The first thing I say to my students is, hi, I'm your new teacher and you're going to fail in this class. And they all just look at me like,
terrifying.
Yeah.
Why did she say that?
Right. I'm like, you've never had a teacher tell you that you're going to fail. And I said, well, you are. And that's the best part of this class, because then you are able to go back and you're able to say, why didn't this work? How can I make it work better? And you know what? It may never work. And that's okay. Because eventually when you're down the line in that middle school, that high school class, you're going to be like, that's it. That's why that didn't work. And you're going to be able to figure stuff out. So I just really want to grasp them.
Yes.
Make them understand the importance of science so that when they leave, even if they decide to be liberal arts majors or, you know, whatever, they still see the importance of that in their life.
Yes. And it sounds like they're coming alive in your classroom through this process and working with students of all different abilities at the same table.
Absolutely.
Which is another cool thing about your paradigm. Well, I summoned you here, Alicia, because we need insight into how mastery is gained through personalized learning and how you assess that. Mm-hmm. So PLE Standard 5, we haven't talked about it yet this season. It's authentic and adaptive assessment. Georgia DOE's suitcase tells us that for this standard, the educator co-plans with the learner to collect evidence of mastery using varied data-rich performances that are ongoing, authentic, flexible, and relevant, that teachers will prepare learners to self-assess by identifying, documenting, even defending their learning. I hear keywords here, self-assessment. Yes. Defending learning. Mm-hmm. They will build portfolios and have multiple means of demonstration. Why is this important in assessing personalized learning?
You know, test scores are great. They're fantastic. All day, all long, I can make hundreds on every test score and have no idea how to apply what I learned. So I love the adaptive assessments where it's real and it's applicable. And so in my classroom, I don't necessarily focus on that end product, that end score. We talk to the, you know, we talk about what our rubric is or what I want them to do, their success criteria, and most of it is based in the process. So we talk about everything. We have checkpoints throughout. Okay, so let's talk about your plan. That plan's great. Okay, so that's a formative assessment right there. Then I move on to the next station. Okay, so you guys are going to work together as a team. I think of all of the CTAE standards, so the career workplace standards, where I'm learning how to work as a team. I'm learning how to speak in front of a crowd, but I'm also learning the science and how to apply it. So all of those are part of my assessment with students. And at the end, they present what they've done. And it may not be perfect. It may not work. And they have to defend their work. If it does, why does this work? Why is this important? And if it didn't work, the kids that are able to tell me why it didn't work and what they would change in the future do just as well as the kids that have something that's perfect.
Right. It's a unique way of assessing that values process. You said the process in your class
over product
is more
important.
And you said you don't give your students vocabulary, but you encourage them to use the tools of the classroom.
Oh, absolutely.
How so?
Yeah. So they're coming in with content knowledge. So they already know the baseline. One of our favorite quotes in my class is by Albert Einstein, where he says, imagination is more important than knowledge. And so we spend a lot of our time talking about that baseline knowledge that they have. So they're going to be taking, you know, the Georgia Milestones Test, all of these STAR assessments in their classrooms. And those are great. If we can't apply that knowledge and use our imagination to do that, what's the point? They are using the tools of the classroom for example, vocabulary, but they're coming in and they have to show me why that works, how that works. So when I'm talking about force of motion, I might say, all right, so you guys have to explain to me the concept of, you know, Newton's first law. So I know you know it. I know you can answer that question on a test. But to me, the real knowledge, the real understanding comes when you are able to demonstrate and come up with your own ideas. And so, yes, using the stuff from the classroom that they're coming in and actually applying that.
And so it sounds like you're assessing them individually, but also as a group?
That's right. Okay. Yes. So every kid comes in. We have different jobs that they can kind of gravitate towards. So we have the captain, the managing person. We have the kiddo that's working with materials that loves to touch things,
yes,
and build things. And then we have like timers and people that are testing projects and things like that. And so they all have their individual roles. And so we talk about what are those individual roles. And that's what I tell them. When I come around, I need to be able to look at you and say, what was your part of this project? How did you help build this? How did you help design this? And the kids have to be able to tell me what their individual role was. That way I'm ensuring that everyone is shining in their own way. They get to kind of shine in a way that makes sense for them, kind of, you know, personalized, individualized.
Oh, yeah, their asset-based dispositions. Yes, yes, using their assets.
So using their assets, how are they able to use their assets to contribute to this group project? So I'm able to kind of assess individually, but also the group project is the final, you know, item that we're going to be discussing, that we're going to be sharing and defending. So again, it's kind of the process is what I'm looking for. The end project's great. The fact that you can defend it is fantastic. But how did you contribute to that project? Because in the real world, we're all working in groups, essentially. You know, when you go work in an office, there's very few jobs that you're just on your own behind a desk. And so I also find that those are really vital skills for my STEM students to have.
To your disclaimer about, hey, you're going to fail in here, it's almost more interesting when they do in these presentations.
Absolutely.
How do the students in the class listening to their presentations, their portfolios, their defenses, how do they react to these failure moments?
I mean, I think we've built up enough of a safe space where the kids feel like they are okay to fail. I try to build an environment where that's more interesting to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I come over, I'm like, oh, it didn't work. Oh, man, that's so cool. Why didn't it work? What would you do next time? What can we do? And I have those really kind of like a fishbowl atmosphere where the rest of the class is watching me interact with these students that have failed and how excited I am about what the possibilities are in the future. Okay, now we know this doesn't work. Check that off the list and move to the next one. And so they all kind of see like, oh, we can make it even better. So even the ones that work are now trying to make their projects better, add an aspect to it that we hadn't thought of yet, because they really want the kids in the class to interact with them. So we often have a question and answer session. Okay, after you've done that, does anyone have any comments on what they said? That's also really great assessment, because the kids are using what they've learned to comment on what other kids have created. And so there's so many authentic opportunities for assessment that you might just not even think about unless you're like, oh, yeah. Asking questions is a form of assessment.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So help us understand, tease out those two words, authentic and adaptive. What makes these measures authentic and adaptive, that you're using maybe checklists, you're using the natural course of discussion? What makes them those two things?
Right. I mean, I have to have checklists and rubrics and success criteria, and I do have those things. I think the authenticity of my assessments are when kids are able to choose sometimes how they do something. So I will give them, you know, a topic. We're going to be building a house, and I need you to figure out a way to wire this house for electricity so that when I flip a switch, all the lights come on. These are your materials. Have at it. That, I think, is really authentic, because then you're having those assets play out.
You know,
the kids can try, oh, I know, I'm going to do this. I can do this part. And so you see them get really excited. To me, that's very authentic. That's a real world thing. You have to be able to, you know, turn on the lights in a house. Oh, wait, but you also have to pass inspection. You also have to get a permit. You also have to do this. So I constantly am throwing things at them. Like, they think they've got it. And then I'm like, oh, no, you know, the permit office rejected your permit. You know why? And then we talk about why. How do you fix this? And then they get right back at it. That's authentic to me. Something they're going to encounter in the real world. Oh, you know what? We had, you know, Decatur sometimes has issues with their streets flooding because their drainage isn't great. We did a whole city planning thing. Like, okay, how can we fix this? How do we fix the drainage system? What science is involved in this? Who would come help us? We talked to city officials, you know, things like that. So making it authentic to me means making it personal to the kids. They can go home and they can be like, oh, you know what? We need to fix this drainage system and talk to their parents about what's happening in their area. Now, adaptive, it might change. So I've been halfway through a project and realized like, oh, these kids are more interested in this aspect. Mm. So we pivot a little bit. Tell me more about this. And so I learn just as much from the children as they learn from me, probably even more. It changes every year. You know, I have a group of kids that are coming up that have been really interested in robotics. And so I've really leaned into that, taught them the robotics, the coding. But then I say, you know what? Now these are resources. These are tools for you. So when we're building our houses or we're learning the moon phases, if you can figure out a way to incorporate those robots to tell me what you've learned, that's great. So I've adapted that for that kid that's really great at coding and may not be as great with their engineering skills, you know? And right. So giving them the opportunity to show what they know and what they've learned and how it applies to them in the real world in a different way, they don't all have to be the same. You know, so when we give a traditional assessment, it's the same thing. Yes. Everyone has to learn and
static.
Regurgitate in the same way. Whereas I feel like this kind of assessment, the authentic, the adaptive assessment is just so much more meaningful. I have kids stop me, you know, that are eighth and ninth grade now. They'll be like, oh, you know what? I took this woodworking class and I was able to like, you know, build this tower. And they will come and talk to me about things that they remember doing in elementary school and how that's affecting them. Those are the authentic assessments. The yes. ones that are going to stick with kids, the ones that matter, they're not going to remember the score they got on their economics test. You know, how did that apply to my life? That's a different story. And so that's kind of my goal, is making these assessments make sense.
And they're able to embrace the tools of the classroom that most resonate with their yes, skills and absolutely. Harness those for a learning objective.
Yeah.
Okay, you're very inspiring, STEM lady. What approaches do you use to collaborate with other teachers in the school?
I do. Well, I have to, because I like meeting with my grade level teachers. And sometimes, you know, there's science concepts that are really hard to do in a traditional classroom in the 45-minute constraint of time. And so I have the luxury of stretching projects out and giving the kids more space. I have storage. You know, what do you want me to do? What is a concept that your kids are struggling with that I can kind of make come to life? And that might be different every year. You know, they might be teaching erosion and weathering one year and these kids just aren't getting it. How can we make that like a real life applicable situation? And so I'll pull that, just kind of working with them to flip my curriculum. I do that a lot.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah. That's a cool standard strategy you got there.
Yeah. I mean, it works because they are teaching the content, basic content, like I said, and doing the hands-on, and the kids come to me with concepts and then I'm applying. So I figured a lot of time you learn something at the beginning of the year, and by the end of the year, it's like it never happened.
It's gone.
Yeah, if you don't have something to attach that to. And so the kid goes to the next year, and the teacher's like, remember last year when you did this? And they're all like, we never learned that, you know? And and their last year's teacher is just, you know, going crazy. And so what I do is I look at their year-long curriculum, and I start at the end. So I'm introducing concepts to them. I'm not going in depth. I'm not, you know, like teaching them the, like I said, you know, all of the fill in the blank vocabulary, all of this. I'm like, hey guys, listen, rocks and minerals are pretty cool. You're like, you yeah. don't know a whole lot about them, but let me talk to you about the different kinds of soil. And look, let's touch the different kinds of soil. And one year I had my third graders build mud bricks. And we watched videos about how homes are built with mud bricks. And so I gave them all these different materials. We talked about the properties of all these different materials. And they came up with their own recipe. And then we used ice cube trays. And we packed them with mud and let them dry in the sun. And then they used them to build a building. And then we tested the weight, how much weight that building would hold. And so when they got to rocks and minerals and types of soil in third grade, they already kind of had it. Oh, I know what peat is. I remember that was the
background
one.
Knowledge.
Yes, they yeah. had that background knowledge. And, you know, at a school like mine, where we have our Title I kids, we have our English language learners, we have our kids with special needs, we have all different kids. We have kids that get to travel, kids that don't get to travel. You know, we run the gamut in, you know, Decatur. And so that background knowledge is so vital, because some of these kids don't have the same background knowledge. So trying to build that up, That's the beginning of my year, is giving them that background knowledge. Now, by the end of the year, the stuff I'm doing, they've already learned.
Mm.
And so then that comes the like extension, that application. Okay, oh, so you've already learned about microbiology. Why does this matter? I want you to discover this. You have to like raise a tardigrade. We have to do all of these different things. That's when we kind of bring in partners at the CDC, or we talk about different things that we can do to elevate what they've learned.
Yeah.
And so it's a review. I mean, we're talking about assessment. The biggest assessment we have in Georgia is the Georgia Milestones. And so that actually kind of helps kids, instead of cramming all this science knowledge into their brain at the end of the year and making them kind of hate it. It's just a review. Oh, we've been doing this all year. We understand.
It's more application.
We're bringing it back. It's application. It makes, oh, erosion and weathering. And then I also like to talk to the fifth graders after, like, don't tell me questions. Don't tell me, just like concepts. What was difficult this year? And so I did that last year. I talked to my kids. What was difficult for you? And a lot of them were like, you know, erosion and weathering, all that vocabulary, it was really tough. And I said, all right, so this year, that's what we're going to focus on. We're going to find a way to apply that. And so I'm constantly learning from the kids, constantly changing. I don't do the same thing every year, much to the, you know, chagrin of my family when I come home. I'm like, no, I have to rewrite the lesson. They're like, you did it last year. You know, I think that's part of teaching. If you're not moving constantly, you just kind of die out.
And you got to know your audience. Yes. And you're being very adaptive to your audience, which is a key to yes. personalized learning. You mentioned collaboration with outsiders.
Mm.
How do you collaborate with outside organizations? Maybe yeah. parents are part of this.
I love outsiders.
They're insiders.
They are. Well, they're such an amazing aspect of our community. We have people that are doctors that work in the CDC. We have people that work for our city. I have the luxury of having a very small city, so I'm able to like email the mayor and be like, hey, we want to talk about city drainage. Who do I contact? You know, we want to talk about the recycling. I had some kids that got really upset about our recycling program, and I emailed the mayor and she sent me who I need. They came out and had a meeting with the kids and talked about it. So we're lucky in the fact that I can kind of reach out to who makes sense to come in, show them there's a job for that. I have parents come in and give feedback on projects sometimes. So, you know, when my kids build their houses, we'll have like a real estate agent come in, or a parent that, you know, can give them some feedback, an electrical engineer, someone's parent who's an electrician, that kind of thing, come in and ask the kids questions and talk to them. There's just so many resources out there. When we have our STEM night, we bring in everyone from the community. We have the Wild Center. We have the City of Decatur. We have a bird rescue, Legacy Park. Everything that I can grab, I send it out early. I send it out often. Meet and greet just happened for us. And so I had a couple of parents talk to me about like, oh, I love tardigrades. And I'm like, oh, you do?
Noted.
Would you like to come in? Having those parents come in, because then kids are going to see, I mean, they see me every day. They get to see someone else that has a different level of expertise.
It's enriching.
It's so enriching, because I don't know everything. I never will know everything.
And I don't believe that for a second, based on what I've heard.
If I can bring in an expert, though, you know, then they're going to meet my kids where they are, then that's even better.
And it's making that skill of communicating and collaborating just baseline.
Yes.
Instead of it being extra and additional, and then we're dealing with social skills when we get in the much yes. higher grades, this is something that is practiced young.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can you leave us with some final strategies to help our fellow educators who want to make their assessments more authentic and adaptive?
Yeah. I would say talk to your students. What do they want to do? You know, you have your standards you have to teach. Is there a different way that you can meet that standard other than having them write a 5-paragraph essay or have them taking a quiz? Ask them, how can you show me what you've learned? This is your standard. This is what I need for mastery. You have to be able to do this. How can you show me that you know this in a creative way? And kind of leaving it up to them, those like passion projects. And there is time for that. You know, all the time you spend, it doesn't have to be a huge, big project. How could you write a poem about this? Do you love writing? Could you do this? Painting a picture, creating a model. I don't care how you do it, but you have to prove to me that you understand. Is it harder to grade that way? Yeah. Do you have, you know, different rubrics for different things? And, you know, yes, it's not easy. It's more time consuming. But in the end, that's what that kid's going to remember. They're going to remember coming to school with their musical instrument they created to demonstrate, you know, sound waves, more so than the test they took where there were two questions on sound waves, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that focusing on the kids, letting them kind of lead the way with assessment.
Which is personalized learning, baby.
That's right. Let them be creative. Let them show their strengths, their assets. How can we let them do that? I think if we do that more often in class, our kids are going to remember what they learned, and they're also going to love what they learned. And so I think that's really important.
And they're going to apply what they learn, right, which is all the application person wants for
them. That's all I need.
Alicia, you're amazing. I'd call you our Reno 911 based on your last name, but that show is sheer satire.
I love it though.
It's satirical. It's a great time. You definitely pass our test. Thank you for being here. Congrats on all your success.
Well, thank you.
And your work is very stimulating. So just keep it going.
I'm
keep it going out
that
there in Decatur.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Alicia. Teachers, please give application-grounded instruction and authentic and adaptive assessment your best shot. These fluid, creative marks of personalized learning make it all the more engaging and effective, as you've just heard. You're a great teacher. I'm Ashley Mingwasser. Hope you'll keep listening to our final personalized learning episodes on the platform for Georgia's teachers as we wind down Season 7. It ain't over till it's over. Goodbye for now. The Personalized Learning series of Classroom Conversations is funded by The Great Initiative. In the fall of 2020, the Georgia Department of Education made a commitment to student-centered approaches through Georgia's Restart, Embrace, Engage, Expand, and Enhance Learning with Technology initiative.